I'm the king of rock. There is none higher. Sucker MCs should call me sire. To burn my kingdom, you must choose fire. I won't stop rocking till I reach.
This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. If guys like 50 Cent, Nas, and Kanye West are the modern face of big money hip-hop, Russell Simmons is the man who made hip-hop a big money game. Today he runs or advises clothing companies, arts nonprofits, and the diamond industry. He's an avid yoga practitioner who preaches spiritual and physical discipline. Simmons brings all of his talents to bear in his new book, Do You. In it, he explains how each of us can find our sweet spot, our life's work and mission. Despite Russell Simmons' new Zen frame of mind, though, he's been having a pretty bumpy book tour. One radio DJ hung up on Simmons, and a reporter at WGN-TV in Chicago blogged about their interview saying, quote, "All of the book's quotes from Gandhi about peace and love are fine, but it's all hard to take seriously when the author is cussing on two phones at the same time." You should brace yourself in our interview for some sensitive language. I recently took a deep breath and sat down with Russell Simmons face to face at our NPR West studios. I started out by asking him to give me a memory, anything that stood out to him as a magical moment in hip hop.
I have so many memories, but this particular one, Run-DMC at the Garden. I remember bringing the head of Adidas. Run says, "Hold your sneakers in the air." And everybody held up their shell-toe Adidas. And that was beginning of the endorsement process. You know, everybody got involved in trying to use hip-hop to sell their product. But the real example, of course, was that those sneakers were selling as a result of Run-DMC's endorsement. But when everyone held their sneaker up in the air, it was crazy. It's a great image.
My Adidas walk through.
Of course, that memory is actually about marketing as much as it is about hip-hop. Back in 1983, Russell Simmons signed the fledgling hip-hop group Run-DMC to his management company. It didn't hurt that rapper Joseph Simmons, or Run, is Russell's brother. Run-DMC went on to become the first rap group with a video on MTV and the first hip-hop album to go gold. Since then, it seems like most things Russell Simmons touches have turned to gold. He turned Def Jam Records into a powerhouse and sold it to Universal. He runs the Fat Farm and Baby Fat clothing labels, has a nonprofit called the Hip Hop Summit Action Network, and does financial lectures with Donald Trump. Still, Simmons writes in his new book that business always has to take a bow to principle. In your book, you say, "It didn't sit too well with Pepsi that I was talking about how KFC abuses over 850 million chickens a year by painfully de-beaking them, crippling them, and eventually scalding them alive. Because of my outspokenness about KFC, they were forced to take their deal off the table, and I didn't have a problem with their decision."
No. I think the problem is much bigger than any one company. Sometimes companies get put under fire, and when they change, then the marketplace changes. And that's good, but it's not one company. And again, the KFC is not alone in the abuse of the chickens. In fact, that they the same practices as everyone else. If they make a decision now to make some changes, then all the people who supply them with chickens have to change based on their decision because they're that big. So that's why you go up to the leader, KFC makes a change, then all of our chickens would change dramatically. So that's why they're still focused on that dialogue, and hopefully they'll come to a good resolution.
I bring that up as an example, though, of the way that you make leadership decisions. So you have money and you have ethics.
Money means money is small. I mean, the book Do You is about your inner voice. And when you connect to that voice, then the freedom comes. And we're only here to be happy. So happy makes money. Money doesn't make happy. In other words, when you connect to the seconds of presence and you're able to operate in order, operating in order allows you the freedom to attach those laws of attraction they talk about, that's where they come from, the core. You may refer to it as Christ consciousness, or Buddhists call it nirvana. Yogis call it samadhi. I forget what's in the Kabbalah, but always in the fourth chapter of the Yoga Sutras, they talk about the miracles that you can promote. Jesus Christ said, "All these things I do, you can do, and greater." The mystics that always have told us how to attract things. And the book really talks about the most practical ways to promote happiness and to be successful.
Let me put things in the context of Buddhism, one of the religions that you mentioned. There's a concept of right livelihood, which is that your work must be ethical, as must the rest of your life.
Yes.
Do you ever feel that the kind of music that you produce and promote with issues of misogyny with issues of violence goes against that tenet of right livelihood.
I think that the expressions that come out of the mouths, and I haven't made a record in a long time, but the expressions that come out of the mouths of these rappers are truthful, many of them. And I've always felt comfortable with what I put out. And I think that sometimes, like, you may not like to hear truth from our communities. Sometimes poor people are locked out, have no voice, and we don't have to deal with their problems or their reflections of our problems even. You know, a lot of times the poets, they can see our contradiction. When you say there's some violence in a rap record, why never mention the amount of violence in our communities? When you hear that a rapper says, don't talk to the police, why not talk about the disconnect between police and community? The reflections of the problems are not the problems. The problem is that we ignore struggle in our community, and then when we hear it on a record, we want to point the finger at the artist. The artist's job is to paint a picture of society. People look inside for answers and write poetry. They write all kinds of things that make you uncomfortable. We don't want to talk about the misogyny in our society. I would say that the rappers are less sexist than their previous generation. The preachers, the police, the firemen, those are more sexist individuals for the most part than the rappers. To give you an example, in the pulpit, you know, I mean, well, never mind. You know the preachers, of course. But we overlook them.
But let me just take you to where I come from. I grew up listening to hip-hop. I'm 37, and hip-hop was one of those influences that helped raise me. And I have a great respect for the genre. But at the same time, when I was listening to Planet Rock or I was listening to Roxanne Shanté or to Run DMC, I wasn't, as a child and as a young adult, messaged to and told that I was a bitch or a hoe.
Well, I would say, wait, you know what? I can talk about this for the next hour. We only have 20 minutes. I want to get back to my book, but I will say this to you. The expressions that we're referring to and the language that we're talking about is the language of young people. There's a magazine called Bitch. It's a feminist magazine. It said an insult hurled so many times at an insulted becomes the property of the insulted. Now, the language and the intention are usually different things. And when just because you don't like some words, the words are the least, I recommend you take bitch, hoe, and nigga off the radio. I've already done that. But not because when I hear this is for the niggas and the bitches, which is one of my favorite Def Jam records, I don't feel inspired. Just because people like you don't understand it. So when you hear a racist comment by someone else using the word nigga, believe me, it's not the same as when you hear 50 Cent say nigga.
I'm going to go back to your book.
I think you should understand that. But as we get older, sometimes we get a little bit rigid. The words are not the problem. It's the content. The content is what should offend you, maybe. But that's the offense of society.
Russell, I agree with you on the difference between the words and the content. I agree with free speech. But I do want to say, and you can certainly respond, I do want to get back to your book, that while the word nigger, when used in the context of hip-hop, KRS-One came in here, and he sat down with Paul Mooney. Paul Mooney was like, I'm a recovering N-word addict. And KRS-One said, this is our word.
But this whole interview is full of not the reason we came here, James.
Okay, let me take you into the studio. Russell is here at NPR West, just a few feet from me, in spotless white athletic shoes, a shirt with a yoga theme, and a crisp baseball cap tilted to the side. While he's going off, he is leaning off, away from the mic, that is. He's talking to his assistant in the studio, complaining about the interview, while I think, is he about to run the heck out of here? Luckily, he doesn't.
Did they tell you why I came here?
Of course. You came here to promote your book.
I only got 5 minutes.
All right.
If I knew I was, you know, taking this long trip to come and discuss only you questioning my, I can promise you that my job in hip hop, this is the way I can end it for you. I run the Hip Hop Summit. I run the Foundation for Ethnic Understanding. I run the Diamond Empowerment Fund. I run the Rush Philanthropic Art Foundation. I helped set up the Ludacris Foundation. I helped Chingy for Change. I helped For Sure For Kids. And I helped all of the many charities that hip hop's set up.
And that's what I was
going to
ask you about today.
My job is as a servant of hip-hop. That's my job. And from the outside, people who criticize are not able to serve properly. I'm on the inside. So when I walk into a new business and I open doors, whether it's not one black person in the clothing business, now it's a hip-hop convention, or I walk in a diamond business, Diamond Empowerment Fund starts, and I try to switch the whole industry to kind of understand a point of view about Africa, it's because of the resources that I have.
Mr. Simmons, I want to give you
the reason I'm giving you all this background is so that you will understand I think it's all clear if you read the whole book.
I'm trying to actually give you some props here, believe it or not.
All right, because I want to get back to my book. I'm a servant of hip-hop.
Tanisha Jackson, right here.
And I love hip-hop, and I'm a servant of it.
Page 220, Tanisha Jackson.
I use too, sometimes.
All right, Tanisha Jackson, you have a long anecdote about how she came and she stood outside.
She's wonderful.
Tell me about her.
Well, I believe Tanisha was a very, very resilient, hardworking, dedicated person. She wanted to serve. And I talk quite a bit about leadership, that service is key. You know, that you're a servant if you're a leader. She came and she was willing to do anything. And she was very dedicated, not for results, but just to add value. So she stood out in front of speeches I made and then came to speeches I made and then she stood in front of my office and eventually I brought her in. I put her in one of the most difficult work environments, working for Brother Gary. He's kind of tough. He's here with us now. He's tough. And she worked with him and then she became a very important executive in my company. And what the book is about is teaching people how to be greater contributors more than teaching people how to receive, because receiving is giving inside out. It's not a problem getting. If you help somebody make money, you don't get some paper. It's true. That's just the science of the universe. And that's the karmic laws are unbreakable. The book is about those laws, how to operate under them. So that's what the book Do You is about, your inner voice.
But I want to ask you about the rap thing
made me a little uncomfortable because I've been, I had a book tour. And my whole book tour was about love and consciousness. And everybody wants to talk about bitches and hoes, which, you know, I'm happy to talk about it, but by the time I leave, if I haven't discussed consciousness and love, then I haven't done my job. So I wanted to get the subject right. See, you hate when a poor person tells you how full of crap you are. They say it in such a mean way, and it sinks in you.
What is your favorite? You talk about 12 laws in this book.
Yeah.
What is your favorite or most compelling law of those?
Well, there's 12 laws only because there's 12 chapters. And each one is like not meant to bind you up, but to free you. And I think the most important chapter, and it was, you know, that's why Oprah named this book. It's a very funny story that it was named the 12 Laws of Success. You know, I was out of breath and out of ideas, and so 12 Laws. She said it's a corny title. The good title for the book is Do You. And then she said the reason the title Do You is good, Do You refers to the inner voice.
Well, you brought up Oprah and you went on her show and said that hip-hop had done more for civil rights. No, hip-hop had done
race
more
relations.
For race relations than the civil rights
no
movement.
No question about that. No question about that.
Just briefly explain.
When Run DMC got MTV, it wasn't no black people, period, except Michael Jackson. Period. Michael Jackson, he had broken nose and straightened hair. Now MTV is a totally integrated space. This next generation, Eminem and 50 Cent, think they're the same people. And they are, you know, because the worst disconnect was the trailer parks and the projects. When the trailer parks and the projects look alike in the minds of the people living in these places. So this next generation is much better on that subject. Kids in Compton are now talking directly to the kids in Beverly Hills. Kids in Beverly Hills understand the plight of the poor there. And that's very important. Rap has done that.
Okay, Russell, I have a strange question for you.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll make you upset, angry.
I'm not upset. I'm sitting there laughing. I just wanted to get my 2 minutes in about my book.
So here's the thing. I've got a goddaughter who's 4 years old. She is one of the best little people in the world.
She shouldn't have to hear bitch and hoe on the radio, right?
Right. I got a business proposition for you from her mother. She's like, I really wish somebody would put out clean mixtapes for kids because I want to play rap to my daughter because she needs to listen to it. If I came up to you and I was like, Russell, you should really start this business.
Oh, no, I'm not a business guy.
Uh-huh.
I'm a creative guy, and I only do business as a result of, like, I try to find what my gifts are and give them immediately. As soon as I get them and I understand them, I give them back. I'm born into the cycle of giving that we're all born into, and I recognize it. So just because something's a good business, I'm not a business guy. I'm a creative guy. So I'd miss out on that. And if I want to do a poetry show on HBO, for instance, I have to start the ball rolling because no one likes that idea. Then I have to fight for that. I'm going to do the comedy. No one wanted to do that. When I started in the diamond business, no black person, period, was in it to do what we're trying to do to change the industry. So I like to do things that I see clearly that are in my, you know, scope, and then I have to figure out how to get the talented or smart business people around me to execute. That's what I have to do. So that's a great vision, but it's not mine. But I want to hear more clean mix records, but, you know, I don't know if I want to hear them, but I know people, need them.
Maybe your daughters want to hear them.
My daughters listen. Yeah, but they got records. My daughters listen to them all the time.
If you could distill one last thing before you go.
What? I don't know. Atman the fragrance. We're giving away 100% of the proceeds.
I was thinking
Atman is available now. What else?
I was thinking of something about
Diamond Empowerment Fund. I have a bracelet. Uh-huh. I want to raise $35 million for Africa. And so I don't know if just one bracelet will do it, but it could if I sell a million of them. And the bracelet, this bracelet, which you'll have one of, is the main symbol. 50% of the proceeds from this and 25% of the Green Initiative. And the board is a separate, the Diamond Empowerment Fund is a separate thing, but that's where the money goes.
How much do they retail for?
This brace is $130.
Unfortunately, I cannot accept it due to the ethics rules of
what's
NPR.
What's the most you get?
50.
Man, I gave every radio disc jockey in the country one of these braces.
Oh, it's part of my right livelihood.
Really? $50?
Yep.
I mean, I'm not paying you off.
No. It's not. It's just the rules. So just finally, give me one sentence of something that you might say to your daughters. Just to, you know, you're giving advice here for adults, but maybe just one sentence or a couple sentences.
Oh, I tell them all. I tell Ming Lee every day, practice love. That's all of our job, to practice grace and love, to smile and breathe. In yoga, every pose, you smile and breathe, no matter how difficult the pose. So I tell Ming Lee, practice love.
Russell Simmons, thank you.
Thank you.
Words to the wise from rap mogul Russell Simmons, even if it took a bit of agita to get there. Believe it or not, after all this, we walked out of the studio, shook hands, and he signed our NPR West Wall of Fame. We even have the pictures to prove it, and you can find them at our website, npr.org/newsandnotes. Become an MC, and our script became amazed at me, so Larry put me inside, stabbed to lack, the stripper drove off and we never came back. Next on News and Notes, a book, a miniseries, a phenomenon. We look back at roots and ways to go from black and blue in the workplace to black and empowered. That's the life that I lead, and you sucker MC, it's you IP, so take that and move back, catch a heart attack, because there's nothing in the world that run the level.